Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650 with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance. We are live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. The hotline is brought to you by Dispatch Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. The first call, the only call, we now go to the Dispatch Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning to chat with our next guest. He's a presentation of Angry Otter Liquor from 32 Thoughts and the Jeff Merrick Show. He is Jeff Merrick. And Jeff, thank you for joining us. And I got to say, in particular, I mean, you have to put up with producer Dom Shermati on 32 Thoughts all the time, and you still made time to join us here on this show. So we thank you for that.
I know, and I got to spend more time tomorrow doing Tops and Tails for an interview that we did last week with James Van Riemsdyk. So I'm not done with Dom yet.
Apologies.
Not quite done yet. I know. There's no heavy lifting, but still, I carry things with me.
So, Canucks without Thatcher Demko for an undetermined length of time. We'll see what we hear. Probably just the classic week-to-week update, I expect, from
lower body. Don't forget lower body.
Yeah, lower body week-to-week, but we'll see. Mm-hmm. I mean, how concerned should the Canucks be, given that, they still do have this pretty impressive cushion built up in the Pacific Division over the Oilers right now?
They have a cushion, and also it's a really easy, I shouldn't say easy, I always sound like I'm offending teams, but like a relatively easy schedule for the rest of March, right? Like, you have the Colorado Avalanche tomorrow, they have the Colorado Avalanche. And then, it's the Washington Capitals on a road trip. It's the Buffalo Sabres, the Montreal Canadiens, the Calgary Flames, who have really taken a turn. The Los Angeles Kings, who are kind of a jump ball team right now. Dallas is going to be a tough one. And then the team finishes up with the Anaheim Ducks. And that is the month of March. So between the cushion and the relatively easy schedule, there's no four-game weeks. The most is a three. The Rangers are playing 5-7 right now. It looks like an American Hockey League schedule right now for them. But my concern meter is pretty low right now for the Vancouver Canucks without Thatcher Demko for the next couple of weeks.
Longer term, Jeff, do you get nervous at all about a performance impact when a goaltender has a lower body injury at this time of year?
Yeah, you do. I mean, again, like without knowing any more of the specifics of this, I always hate it. Like, I always hate playing sort of amateur doctor or like guessing at injuries.
Yeah.
That's why like there's only so much I feel comfortable even having the conversation about what Vegas is doing, because like I hate playing amateur doctor, although everyone plays one on Twitter. So until, we know more of the specifics, as we say in the Atlantic, Thomas. I'm pretty uncomfortable sort of speculating about anything long term, even if it is as vague as lower body. But like, look, like make no mistake about it. Like everybody else, I gasped, and right away, because I'm a Canadian hockey fan, my default setting is assume the worst when I saw Demko leave, because I think that most of us are on the same page. The one player that the Vancouver Canucks really don't want to lose. Like, you don't want to lose anybody, but that's the one guy. And the one thing that Vancouver's been blessed with this year, outside of great performances by key players, they've really been healthy. And this is the first really significant bit of, sort of injury adversity that the team has faced this year. It's to the worst possible position in net.
Do you think the Canucks have evolved defensively to the point where we can talk about it the way like we talk about Cam Talbot on the Kings? Like, yeah, their goaltending might be a weakness, but it also just might not matter.
Yes, and that is for the entire group. That's not just the blue line. Like, do not get the same feeling. Yep. Like, there's much more of a defensive posture to this team. Like, look, like Rick Tocchet has talked about this, and Rick Tocchet has sat players down. I mean, look, you guys are there every game, every practice, like through everything with the Vancouver Canucks. You know what Tocchet's been preaching and what Tocchet's been teaching, and whether it's JT Miller or Elias Pettersson, there are certain non-negotiables that Rick Tocchet has, and a lot of that is revolves around having a more defensive posture. So is that goaltending position more insulated than it's ever been? Yeah, I would have to say yes, and I don't think that's like the hottest of all possible takes about the Vancouver Canucks. And yeah, like absolutely, this team is is better equipped now to handle a Thatcher Demko injury than I think they've been in quite some time.
Jeff, you're a hockey history guy. When you think about, like, when I think about late season lower body injuries for goalies, right? I think about
Dominik Hasek, Ottawa.
Dominik Hasek, Ottawa, for sure. That was a painful one. And classic Senators. Yeah. I think about Ryan Miller, 2015 in Vancouver.
Yep.
I think about Corey Schneider. And in most cases, you know, again, I don't want to do the speculation thing, but in most cases, that it's the start of a story that either is a good thing, like, hey, player gets extra rest, right, before the playoffs, the sort of Aiden Hill version of the story, I suppose, or it's the, you know, impact we couldn't anticipate until the playoffs begin. Do you ever sort of think about those past examples as like a antidote to speculation?
I'll tell you what, like, the reason I spit out Hasek right away is I always look at that one as the worst possible case scenario. One, it seemed like, you know, his groin was made of angel hair pasta and just went whoop, and then that was it. And two, I mean, you guys remember Dominik Hasek. If he wasn't 100%, he wasn't getting on the ice at all. Like, he was, I remember them like literally begging Hasek to get on the ice, to just try it. And, you know, defiantly, there was no way he was getting on the ice. And so that's what, sort of how I sort of measure late season goalie injuries by, like, what's the Hasek factor here? Like, if you're close to Hasek, where you, unless you're 100%, you're not even stepping on the ice, then it's bad. But we've seen plenty of goaltenders, you know, what's the old saying, Dran? So, like, you get to the playoffs, if you're at, like, what, 80%, then you're good enough to go. Like, no one's going to be 100% by the end of 82 games. So I kind of look at Hasek as, like, that's the bar to me.
Yeah.
And the closer you get to Hasek, who just flat out refused, that's when you start to get scary. But again, like, I don't know the injuries, and whatever the injury is, then we can maybe look at the history of that very specific part of his body and maybe start to make more assumptions. But again, like, again, I'll go back to my previous statement. Canadian hockey fan here, assume the worst, be nervous about everything. But yeah, that's kind of why I always go back to Hasek, because I maybe, like a Canadian hockey fan, I'm just more comfortable assuming the worst in every single situation.
We're way ahead of you.
Though, yeah.
Are you a Canucks fan? You sure you're not a Canucks fan?
I have a very, very soft spot in my heart for the Vancouver Canucks. I remember a 10-year-old Jeff Merrick cheering for King Richard Brodeur you wouldn't believe back in the day. I would rather have it now than in, like, the second round, because that's when it not that you can choose when you have your injuries, and not that you ever want to have them, but I guess, I mean, it's never great. But I'd rather have it now than in the playoffs. And again, like, this month looks okay, right? Like, this month looks fine. You're not bringing in the murderer's row of playoff teams. Like, not like, you look at what the Washington Capitals are facing as they're trying to, I mean, they didn't look like much last night against Winnipeg, but if you look at the Washington Capitals schedule from here to the end of the season, it's the GFL, not a chance for the Capitals when you look at their schedule. But Vancouver looks fine. Like, you just get through March, get through whatever injury this might be, and Vancouver's going to be just fine, because it's a pretty easy calendar for the rest of the month.
My line, by the way, and you're welcome to take it, is to reference Canada's greatest superhero, at least arguably, and say that every NHL player becomes Wolverine once the Stanley Cup playoffs begin, Jeff.
Based on Tim Dr. Hook McCracken, as we all know, who just not too long ago passed away. Yes, titanium, absolutely. The Wolverine motif is,
I believe it's adamantium.
I use often.
Yeah. Merrick,
that's it.
Come on.
Adamantium. I apologize. I need to know my Wolverine comics better.
Now, only because you're a big enough nerd to indulge me here, would you consider Superman to be Canadian?
Make the argument for me.
Well, just the writer works
inventor,
for the...
but the character's not Canadian.
He's I suppose he's from Krypton.
In Iowa.
I mean, like Wolverine, legitimately, you can say, like, as a character, it's Alberta, right?
Yeah.
Like, legitimately, but, like, Superman, just because the person that created you is Canadian.
Is working at the Toronto Star at the time. If you're created on Front Street, in my mind, you're Canadian, but I'm taking an expansive view of it.
So I'd have to go back and look at which novels Ernest Hemingway wrote when he was working for the Toronto Star, and then we'd then extrapolate all of his characters.
Great by Canadian literature. Canadian.
Living at Spadina and Bloor when Hemingway was writing some of these great books. Does that make the characters Canadian? No, it doesn't, Trancer. Come on.
I'm not sure about that one. all right, back to hockey here for a few minutes while we have you, Jeff.
I do like that, but I gotta applaud Trancer. That's a really good one. I do like those digressions. That's really good, Trancer.
It was a good effort.
I like it.
So the trade deadline's passed. Now the Canucks were exceptionally quiet. You know, not even the sixth round pick for a depth defenseman move on deadline day itself. Other teams in the West that week were a little more active. Obviously, starting with Vegas, who makes the massive Tomas Hertl acquisition.
Yeah.
Did you see the Canucks? Did they lose significant ground in your eyes over the course of deadline week?
No, not at all. I mean, they made moves throughout the season. I always come back to trying to, it's a funny walk, and you really got to read your team, right? Like, what are the things that Vancouver wanted to do? Of course. But I always sort of go through the stance of, at what point are you adding too much and disrupting everything? Like, I know that, you know, the Boston Bruins were, you know, one Brad Marchand breakaway away from, you know, getting past the Florida Panthers in the first round. But Bobrovsky stuck out the right pad and everything changed. And the Panthers ended up winning that series, as we all know. But I always wonder about, like, did the Boston Bruins do too many things, make too many moves at the deadline? You know, and did that do something to the room? Like, I don't know. All I can do is sort of speculate. Like, there have been some teams that have made, like, you know, a couple of really key moves at the deadline, put them over the top, and it's really worked. I guess it's a matter of, like, you can make a lot of moves that look great and feel great at trade deadline, and then after you say, yeah, you know what, but to push this guy into a different spot, and this guy was unhappy, and it really upset the balance of the room. And I think that's legit, and I think sometimes you deliberately, like, look at the New York Islanders. All of a sudden, Islanders are now up until last night against the Los Angeles Kings, where they just looked awful. They're on a six game winning streak, and all of a sudden we're talking about third in the Metro, and they're catching Detroit for the wild card spot, and they did nothing. You know, and the Islanders really haven't done anything all season long. They're just like, this is our team, period, and that's it. So, you know, no one knows the team better than that coach, those players, and that management group. And, you know, sometimes the best deal, I mean, still cliche, sometimes the best deal you make is the ones that you don't end up making. But let's face it, like, when it comes to the playoffs, and especially in the West, which just looks like a gauntlet this year, my God, whoever's coming out of this mess, like, that's going to be one bruised up team. You know, along the way, you need some luck and you need at least one easy series. And whoever gets that, whoever can stay the healthiest, that's probably going to be the team that comes out of all of it. Are there, you know, moves that put you over the top at deadline? Sure. You look at, you know, Barbashev with the Vegas Golden Knights last year. You look at Matthias Ekholm with the Edmonton Oilers to help get them to a different level. But by and large, you know, I'll tell you what, you know, by and large, a lot of them are noise around deadline. And I get it every year from Berkey. So me and Elliot and Berkey are on this group chat, and every year at deadline, whenever a team, I don't think you mind me telling you this, whenever a team makes a big move, because there's always like a flurry of activity, obviously, Berkey always sends the exact same text. He texts, I checked with the league again, guys. They're only awarding one Stanley Cup. I'm sure you've heard the line before from Berkey.
Yep.
It always makes me laugh. Everybody blows their brains out at deadline. They blow their brains out at free agency on July 1st as well. And Berkey always says the same thing. Guys, I checked with the league. They're still only awarding one Stanley Cup.
Well, and to your point about, you know, maybe making too many trades at a certain point, what did you make of Elias Lindholm's name surfacing in rumors and reports during trade deadline week? And it's fascinating because it seemed, you know, obviously they didn't make that move, right? And now they have to make it work with the player. But, you know, I can't even recall hearing a player's name in reports like that after just having been acquired so recently in a massive deal.
I'll tell you what, there was one team, and I'm trying to pin down who it is. And eventually, and maybe it's going to be years from now, and I call you guys back and say, hey, remember that team that I was talking about 5 years ago? And you're like, no, Merrick, let it go. But there was one team this year that I believe was close to doing a deal for Noah Hanifin, but the feeling around, this was like earlier in the season, but the feeling around the Flames was, if we do this deal now and Arizona bows out, then do we run the risk of the team making a move with that player and getting more? I think it might have been Arizona. I'm not 100% sure. Do we run the risk of that happening? So I have heard of it before, most recently this season. Haven't 100% nailed it down. It might be the Coyotes. But I have heard things like that happening before, most recently this year.
We were having a discussion right before you came on, Jeff, about, you know, the Canucks being tied with the Winnipeg Jets for the fifth best odds in the Western Conference. That's Stanley Cup outrights per the gambling markets today, right? So effectively Vegas, Colorado, Dallas, and Edmonton ahead of Vancouver and Winnipeg, which both come in at 14-1. There's only like three Eastern teams in that mix, but there's a lot of Western sides that are really strong. One thing we often do, we ask people to like tier things or rank things or rate things. If I were to ask you to rank the six Western Conference teams that you think have the scariest shot from the perspective of other NHL member clubs to emerge lifting the Stanley Cup above their heads in June, how would you rank those teams?
From the West? Like, I'll tell you, like, I'm not trying to dodge from this question because my initial answer right away is Dallas. Mm. I know they've had some trouble defending this season. I get that. But I really do love the Dallas Stars. I really do. But the way that I look at it this year, like last season, the story was everybody from the West went to the East and the Eastern teams loaded up and it was tough getting there. And you look what Florida went through to get there. And by the end, Florida was going on fumes. And this year, the story was everybody from the East went West and everybody is loaded up in the West. And I do wonder, that's why I mentioned earlier, like luck and health and at least one easy series or else you're going to be sunk here. I wonder what that team is going to look like that comes out of the Western Conference, whether it is the Edmonton Oilers, whether it is the Vancouver Canucks, whether it is the Colorado Avalanche, whether it is the Vegas Golden Knights. Like, what is that team going to look like? Like, I know it's hard to sort of handicap it that way when you're looking at, you know, odds, because I look right now and I say, man, the Western Conference is way better than the East. But that doesn't mean that the Stanley Cup's going to go to the West again. I just look at, you know, maybe the most impressive team in the NHL, the most impressive collection of teams are in the West, but they all got to play each other.
Yeah.
And they're going to just beat the crap out of each other, you know, for three rounds just to get there. Not that it's going to be a walk in the park for the East, but let's face it, the better hockey this year and the better teams this year are all in the Western Conference. That's where the better games are. But that doesn't necessarily mean that that is the team, whoever comes out of there, is going to emerge as a Stanley Cup champion. I just think they're going to be like, whoever is the trainer for that team, don't lose the recipe for ice. Because you can need a ton of it by the time your team makes it to the Stanley Cup final. Because when we look back, like, honestly, guys, when you look back at the Stanley Cup final, even while it was happening, didn't you get the feeling? I mean, geez, look at Matthew Tkachuk individually. Didn't you get the feeling that that was it? Like, Florida just flat ran out of gas? There were just like too many heavy games they had to play, and they were cooked. And Vegas bullied them. Vegas bullied them and ran right over them. I wonder if the same happens, but in reverse this time around, because the West is just so good this year. Yep. But if I'm going to handicap it, the one that I keep coming back to are the Dallas Stars. And I'll probably say the Stars for a number of years because they're not in a position where they have to give away first-round picks because they don't have any huge holes to fill. Would they have liked one more defenseman? Probably. Were they dancing with Noah Hanifin, probably going back to January? Yes. Was the ask from Calgary for Noah Hanifin something that included picks and a prospect and maybe Logan Stankoven? I believe so. But of all the teams that continue to open windows for the Stanley Cup each and every season, it's the Dallas Stars. I'll pick them this year, and I'll probably pick them for a few more years. That's how good the team's going to be for a while now.
I've had a Dallas Stars fade position for several years running, but you add Tanev and Stankov into that mix, and yes. I'm scared. I'm quickly selling those shares. I'm happy to sell them low. I want nothing to do with my former fade position. They've addressed all their needs.
Yeah, I really and you're right about Stankoven too. Like, I know it sounds like cliched or just like, you know, deadline GM talk for not being able to secure something else at the deadline, but that really is like a trade acquisition. Like, that really is like all of a sudden Logan Stankoven just fell into your laps here. And then we're going to be talking about Maverick Borkton, you know, in a cozy 5 minutes too, when, you know, all of a sudden the American Hockey League, you know, leading scorer falls into Dallas's lap for the playoffs.
It feels like the Lightning adding like Tyler Johnson. I mean, they weren't at the same level, but they added Tyler Johnson midway through or toward the end of that 2013 campaign. And it was immediately like, oh no, they're going to be good. He's going to be good.
Yeah. You get that same feeling with Chris Tanev in Dallas?
I mean, I just think he addresses so many of their needs. Like, they're, he can play in so many different spots. Like, he can help Suter out in tougher matchups if you want. I think he's a really nice fit between Haskinen if you want to throw them at Tufts, and that's what I think they should do. It should just be Tanev. I think him and Esa Lindell could be a killer second pairing, especially if you wanted to try and make Thomas Harley into the Dallas answer to Devon Taves and Filip Hronek, which, by the way, I'd love to see.
Harley looks great.
Harley looks amazing.
So, he's so good playing with Haskinen. He looks fantastic.
The game looks so much slower for him than it used to. Like, it just looks like his decision making's gone up a level. So, man, I think that that Tanev just gives them so many different ways to attack you, and I just think it's a perfect fit. They're the scariest team that could have got him.
The other thing that that I just want to try to sneak in here under the wire before you give me the punt.
Yeah.
I find it really delicious. Like, tonight I can't wait to watch Carolina and the New York Rangers early. I find it really delicious that we're going to see a line tonight for the Carolina Hurricanes of Kuznetsov, Gensel, and Natchez, specifically Kuznetsov and Gensel. So an ex-Penguin and an ex-Washington Capital playing on the same line to try to bring the Carolina Hurricanes the Stanley Cup. That, to me, is just too delicious, considering that we're now looking at the Washington Capitals in retreat, and for the first time since Crosby joined, the Pittsburgh Penguins in retreat. I'm not sure how Caps and Pens fans feel about all this, but I just find this too delicious to pass up.
By the way, we are going to let you go. You've been very generous with your time, Jeff, and we appreciate it, but we were joking about the week-to-week with a lower body update on Demko, and our guy Brendan Batchelor just moments ago tweeting out, Rick Tocchet says Thatcher Demko is week to week with a lower body injury. So we predicted it right on the nose. We got it.
That's a wow. You really stuck your neck out on that one, too.
Yeah, exactly. Jeff, appreciate it as always, man. This was great. Thanks for doing this.
Drancer, and I know Drancer is going to appreciate this one, considering I found out after you guys. Again, hashtag Merrick Lake. Thanks, boys. Always appreciate it.
Let's go.
Thank you, Jeff. That is. Have a great one, Jeff. Appreciate it.
See you, boys.
That is Jeff Merrick on Sportsnet 650, brought to you by Angry Otter Liquor. Find monthly specials, exclusives, and more at Angry Otter Liquor, now with 30 locations across BC. AngryOtterLiquor.crs.
Career highlight. I brought Luongo to do 32 thoughts back in my Panthers days, and he immediately started the podcast with a Merrick Late joke.
That's
amazing.
And I was
losing my mind. So happy about it.
Thanks to Jeff Merrick. We got to take a break. We will. We have a brief chat with Randy Janda coming up on the other side. So we'll talk about the official diagnosis on Thatcher Demko and more Canucks stuff from practice. That's next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Discussing the biggest stories that matter to Vancouver sports fans. Halford and Brough in the morning. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz, Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We now go to the Dispatch Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning hotline to chat with Randy Janda from right here at Sportsnet 650, color commentator on our Canucks broadcast. Randy, what's going on, man?
Gentlemen, how's it going?
It's going well. We're floored by the update from Rick Tocchet that Thatcher Demko is week-to-week with a lower body injury. Just a stunning development there. Not what we were expecting.
Yeah, you guys didn't come back with a breaking news stinger. Come on, what's going on here? Dom and Ben aren't doing their job.
Yeah, we got three producers in the control room today, and none of them hit the breaking news sounder there.
They ate too many Rice Krispie squares. My wife made them today, so they're...
I might be swinging by the studio next week.
We'll leave one out for you. All right, so I mean, we've all had a couple days now to kind of think about it and imagine how this is going to play out. And, you know, as we're joking, look, the update from Rick Tocchet doesn't give us a whole lot of new information. This is where the reports indicated it's heading. But how do you see this next, you know, week-to-week stretch without Thatcher Demko playing out for the Canucks?
Well, let's start off by saying losing a goalie of this caliber is obviously a loss. I don't have to state the obvious here, but when they play well defensively, when they don't give up much, you make the job easier for the other, you know, goaltender, the backup goaltender. So one thing is for sure, even though when, you know, they're playing well, there's a couple of times in every game where Thatcher Demko's making a save that is either, you know, an unbelievable save like he did against LA, or he's making some big and timely saves. And I go back to that 3-0 goal that Phil DiGiuseppe scores. It's essentially a great save on one side, launches a counterattack with Teddy Bluger and PDG going the other way. So there's moments in a game where Thatcher Demko, without doubt, even when they're playing well defensively, he can change the game. He can, you know, give his team confidence. He can make that play. Now, for Casey DeSmith, one thing that the Canucks have been doing well here, guys, is the last four games, they're limiting the amount of the chances that they're giving up. So you work on your structure and your details for this reason, where for a couple of weeks without Thatcher Demko, you're going to really have to, you know, hunker down and keep what they're doing and keep doing that. Because if, you know, forwards are putting in the work and the back pressure that they're providing, if defensively they stay within shape, they get in those shooting lanes, it's never easy to lose a goaltender like this, but it makes it a little bit easier for your backup to say, all right, you know, this is an environment I can work with, which is something that we haven't been able to say in Vancouver over the last 2 years.
Randy, but sounds like Casey DeSmith's going to get a couple games to run with the ball here, and then they'll sort of see, doesn't sound like getting Seelov's games is a priority here. What are your thoughts on how DeSmith has performed over the course of the season? How confident should the Canucks be with him in net?
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of conversation, of course, about recent, you know, statistics and recent numbers, and fair, you know, the Minnesota game has a lot to do with that. But even outside that, maybe not as sharp as he was at the beginning of the year. But I do want to go back to the beginning of the year, because he was rock solid. He was a player that, when given an opportunity, he was taking it. So for a player that, you know, took, what, 38 games last year, he was in the crease for the Pittsburgh Penguins, a guy that has in moments when injuries have come up before, he's been able to fill a role, maybe not 8 straight, but pretty close to that. I think with Casey DeSmith, and from the conversation that not only he and some of the players were having after practice today, is that this is a guy that is not a young, you know, or a guy that has limited games under his belt. He's got games, he understands what his role is. So I think mentally, his game has been maybe really, really good to start off the year. We saw the trend in a different direction when team results also trended in a certain direction. I'm confident that he will bring his game, as long as he gets the help, which this team has shown by playing really, really good in the last four games. But for me, I think this between the ears is where the difference is, where this is a guy that knows what he is. And whether it's Arthur Seelov, obviously a goaltender that's figuring out his way in the AHL, and eventually one day in the NHL, or some of the goaltenders we talked about last year, whether it was Colin Delia and Spencer Martin, who were very much the same. They were playing under a very tough environment, but they were not surefire NHLers. With Casey DeSmith, you have an individual that knows what he has to provide. There's no uncertainty in who he is in the NHL. And I think, you know, I'm expecting to see some just solid play from him, especially if the Canucks can play the way that they did against a Winnipeg or Vegas. What I loved about that Vegas game, guys, was the Canucks just plugged up everything. There's sticks everywhere. They kind of out-Vegased Vegas in that game. And if that's the environment that Casey DeSmith gets, I don't think there's any reason to be lacking confidence in his play.
Randy, we just had a listener text in about, you know, the so-called Carson Soucy effect. And look, you don't want to attribute too much of a team's record to one player, especially not even a star player necessarily like Carson Soucy. But at this point, you know, you map kind of the peaks and valleys of the Canucks season onto Soucy's presence in the lineup, and it fits pretty closely. And, you know, in your eyes, I mean, how much is the Carson Soucy effect really playing a role here, especially considering the way we've seen them really lock down and improve defensively since he's returned to the lineup the most recent time?
Yeah, it's a calming effect, really. When you start looking at his play in multiple fronts, and we generally focus on a player and this player defensively, and as we should, right? Zone denials has been really good, and that game against Winnipeg where it was on the PK, and Winnipeg, I know, has their moments. Whether it's penalty kill or the power play, they're just not very consistent on that front. But Vancouver didn't give him anything. Carson Soucy is an element, he brings that element of just being tougher to pass by, being tougher to navigate around on the blue line. He knows how to use his active stick at the blue line. So that's one component. The physicality is another element that we maybe haven't seen as much since he's been back from the injury, but we know that's a part of his game. Winning battles is something that he does so well, but it's not about only winning the battles, guys. It's the ability to give himself a little bit of time to make the play. And when you've got a defenseman that, I'll be honest, coming from, you know, his previous experience, I wasn't sure if he'd be able to be that second pair guy. Is he more of a third pair guy? You start looking at his time on ice numbers throughout his career. Ian Cole was somebody that played more than he did. There were some doubts on whether he can play that type of role. When he's been healthy, though, I think the record speaks for itself. If I'm not mistaken, it's 18-1-2 for the Canucks this year. And defensively sound, but I love the way that he also picks a spot. His timing when he's, you know, going in for a pinch to keep the puck into the zone and he dives in, he generally is making the right decision. So I say the calming effect to me is what Carson Soucy is all about, where he's able to make those plays in the defensive zone, but he's maybe not going to be the most active player in the offensive zone, but when he does make that read, when he makes a decision to take the puck down the wall or generally just pinch in and keep the puck in and be aggressive, it's just the right decision. We haven't seen too many poor decisions from Carson Soucy at all this year when he's been healthy.
Just before I let you go, Randy, but I did want to ask you about Vasily Podkolzin as well. He's played four games now at the NHL level, and I find it tough to evaluate him because, you know, you saw him at training camp in preseason. His confidence was an all-time low. You know, he looked pretty lost out there. So if you're judging against that bar, obviously he looks like a completely different player now than he did, you know, in September and October. But is there enough beyond just that, clearing that kind of low bar there, that you're seeing from Vasily Podkolzin to, you know, warrant a place in the lineup, for example, when Dakota Joshua comes back?
Yeah, when it comes to his game, I think we've focused a lot about the forecheck, right? Based on Dakota Joshua, the way that he plays is, can Vasily Podkolzin get there? It's kind of the bar that you want to say, okay, at least start that and build some confidence playing the physical game. But what I've been impressed by is, you know, not only that line has been excellent in the neutral zone, Lindholm and Garland, they played really, you know, strong against the Winnipeg Jets, but I like how much more confident he is with the puck. And there's a couple of moments throughout the last couple of games where he's not rushing decisions. When he was in the NHL previously, when you were talking about maybe even the preseason this year, there were moments where you could tell he was not confident. He didn't look comfortable with the puck on his stick. Maybe he was, you know, rushing plays. But what I liked about the last two games specifically, if there's empty space, he's attacking that space. He's getting to the red line to get the puck deep. And it's very much of what Rick Tocchet's been saying. Hey, meet pressure with pressure. If there's, you know, you're going solo and there's maybe two or three defenders in front of you or opposition skaters in front of you, find those pockets of empty space, attack it, get the puck deep, and, you know, don't try to go full on hero mode, just make the smart decision. And with Vasily Podkolzin, when the puck's on his stick, that's one of the areas that I think he just looks so much more confident. Will that have staying power for the rest of the year? It's hard to tell with a young player because you're right. The beginning of the year, the confidence was so low. Mm-hmm. Here, it seems like it's really high. You know, what's that middle ground? But I think that ability to have the puck on his stick and look confident in the neutral zone to make those decisions, that's kind of a differentiator for me, where previously we saw the physicality. We saw, you know, a good shot for Vasily at times too when he was picking corners. But, you know, that willingness to bring on the game and attack those spaces is where I see the confidence really to say, okay, he's thinking differently now. This is a guy that is feeling comfortable on NHL ice, and hopefully it continues.
Randy, appreciate the time. I got to say, I'm disappointed you didn't work in a Marcus Aurelius quote in here anytime.
Yeah, I'm more of like, that's a different, Batch is different, man. I got to tap into a different, me and him roll in different wavelengths. He's a Marcus Aurelius guy. I'm more of a.
You're more of a Tupac guy.
I was going to say Socrates, but let's go Tupac.
Tupac. Yeah, very similar. Very similar guys. Thanks, Randy. We'll talk soon.
Cheers, guys.
All right, that is Randeep Janda from our broadcast right here at Sportsnet 650.
I thought Marcus Aurelius was a really nice feature of Gladiator.
Yes, of course.
What he's most known for.
Small appearance in Gladiator.
My best friends, he says in the film, Maximus and C. Maximus.
All right.
He calls them his best buddies.
Maximus is a buddy.
It's what all the people want to discuss. No, seriously, let's get to the classic activity, if you'll indulge me, of reading between the lines of what Rick Tocchet said about Demko. Now, obviously, we'll play Rick Tocchet audio on the other side of the break. But apparently it's like 30 minutes, though, man. Canucks had two days off.
I was going to say, you go 2 days, and there's just all this pent up. It's like, we haven't heard from Rick Tocchet for a while. I haven't gone this long without hearing from Rick Tocchet in a long time.
I need my daily dose of Puzzle Guy. Yeah. So anyway, this is all from Brendan Batchelor's Twitter feed, so you can follow him.
16 minutes long.
So, yeah.
So we'll see. Maybe we'll trim some or something. I don't know. But that's fantastic.
Anyway, first of all, Rick Tocchet said that Tyler Myers is getting close and may play tomorrow or the next game. He added about DeSmith that he's well-liked. When you like the goalies, you tend to block more shots.
All right.
I'm serious. There's backup goalies who've like never even touched league average, who've hung around the league and like earned additional one-way contracts simply by being the best dudes. So now you know why. On whether Seelovs will get starts, Tocchet said, as of now, we're going game to game. Casey is definitely in for the next few games, which doesn't seem to be game to game, Jamie. And we'll go from there. Do you read anything into that? Doesn't sound very committal.
Non-committal
to getting Seelovs a start.
Yep.
And then this is the most important one. He's not worried at all about whether Demko will be back in time for the playoffs.
That's good to hear.
Is it? Does it matter?
Well, yeah, if he's back in time for the playoffs.
We knew that. No.
Well, okay, sure. But it's just confirmation that that's accurate. And that there's not that. To me, that's confirmation that the should be less than a month is not like, oh, it's 4 to 6 weeks. You know what I mean? Which would the outside of that could put the playoffs in doubt.
His ability. Yeah. Okay.
Right. So to me, that confirms that it's like, yeah.
So you think
3 to 4, 2 to 4, something like that. I do think it matters.
Okay.
It's not that it's a massive surprise.
Yeah.
But it's okay. That's good that there's legitimately, at least publicly, no doubt that that's a risk.
I guess it just comes down to my thinking of this is that the return matters far less than the impact, right? And I guess it's probably tied together. If you're very confident that a player will be back in a month, you're also very comfortable that in 6 weeks they're not going to have any performance impact, right? Is that what you're sort of suggesting?
That's not, that may be a little bit of a leap.
Right.
Right. You can be back, but as we've discussed, not necessarily at 100% of what you are, but job one is get back.
Yep.
Job one is be available. Then you hope the other stuff's not a concern either.
Yep. Okay. Well, we played my game. That was fun.
Good.
It went way quicker than I thought. I thought we'd get a solid 10 minutes out of that.
That's all right.
Yeah.
We'll go into the inbox here for the final few minutes of this segment, and then we'll get our daily, but we missed it yesterday. But our much needed dose of hearing Rick Tocchet talk about hockey on the other side. This text came in from Alex in Regina. How do the betting models have the Golden Knights as a top six team in the West? They've been sub 500 since November. And it's pretty easy.
Everyone,
they're the Stanley Cup champs.
And I think everyone has a sense that they're sleepwalking at the moment.
Yeah. And
But Aiden Hill looked leaky when last the Canucks played them, right? Like, all night long, I was watching that game thinking Aiden Hill's spitting rebounds everywhere. Everywhere. And then the Canucks built their 3-1 lead off of one of those plays precisely, right? Like, you go into that third period 2-1, maybe it's a little different. Certainly it would have felt different, even as the Canucks sort of slowly boa constrictor suffocated the game with smothering defense. But, like, it feels different when it's one shot can change things for everybody, you know? That rebound is the different, like, not the difference in the game. It wasn't the game winner, but it was, like, a big goal, and it felt so predictable when Garland cashed it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. I've gone back and forth on Vegas so much, but I think fundamentally they've lost too many games where if the sleeping giant narrative is the most compelling one, you would have expected them to show up. Like, even a team that's pacing itself and chilling, they've gotten too close to the playoff bar. They've lost too many games to bad teams. They weren't great. In fact, they didn't show up and got out-dueled, outworked by the Canucks when last they faced them. Like, we've seen too many flat performances for me to, like, really be 100% gung-ho on the sleeping giant narrative at this point.
I also just think, you know... You've
heard me wrestling with it in real
time. Yeah, 100%. Well, I mean, look, when the team... They were so impressive winning the Stanley Cup last year, obviously, right? When you have that on record as something you can do in the playoffs, it's going to be hard to give up on a team, to quit on a team and say, no, they truly are, you know, only the 7th or 8th best team in the Western Conference. Having said that, I wonder if there's kind of an element of two things going on here. One, that they're sleepwalking and that they can find a higher level of intensity, but that higher level of intensity will still be much lower than their best from last year. You know what I mean? Just by virtue of being an older team coming off a Stanley Cup campaign and logging all of those extra miles,
yep,
right? Dealing with a lot of injuries. So they might be able to flip a switch, but will it push them to, you know, consensus, one of the consensus 2 or 3 best teams in the league again? That's what I'm much more skeptical about, right? Like, I have every confidence that we'll see a better version of the Vegas Golden Knights, but will that make them more like, you know, a 4 seed as opposed to a 7 or an 8 seed? That's the kind of question I would have about the Vegas Golden Knights, although a lot of that was thrown up in the air, too, with the addition of Tomas Hertl. And you throw Noah Hanifin in there, too, but especially Hertl and all the options it gives them
Hertl
down the middle and in the forward group.
Yeah. He could be a terrifying ad for this team, just like another giant, skilled human being, you know, who I think is way better than we remember because he's been in such a brutal, like, as recently as last year, right? The Sharks, when they had Meyer, Hertl, Carlson together, those three guys together, they looked like a formidable NHL team. Like, they could actually keep up at the top end of their lineup with good teams in the league. And Hertl was a huge driver of that, like a huge part of what they were able to do. Obviously, it's been like an embarrassing spot for them as sort of years of going all in, mm-hmm, chasing the Stanley Cup has massively caught up to that organization. But, you know, my view of it anyway is just that I think Hertl still got a lot of game. So I see that, but also he's missed a lot of time, man. Like,
yep. And integrating to a new team, like finding chemistry, all of those, learning new systems, all of those things.
And they're not locked in to even making it yet.
No, that's true.
I don't know, man. I'm obviously not out entirely on the Golden Knights. Their volatility freaks me out a little bit.
Yeah, volatility is a good word for it. By the way, just before we go to break here, a couple of people texting in noting that Jonathan Lekaramäki season on the line right now in overtime. That's from one texter. Somebody else saying that, yeah, noting that Aurebro's in overtime right now as we speak. So Lekaramäki's season could be over today in Sweden. And the texter asks, if they lose, does he get brought over to Abbey and maybe get a playoff call? Playoff call up, I don't know. But my understanding is that the
club wants to bring him over.
Yeah. It depends on the world championship situation, though, correct?
To some extent. And it's all negotiable. And, you know, one thing you'd say is if there's one general manager in the NHL you'd think might be able to convince
Patrick Alvin,
the Swedish Federation to let him have his guy. Although the players, you know, desires also play a role. I think there's no question, especially with the Max Sasson experience. Like, I do think the Canucks really do want to try and get guys into Abbotsford for those late season tastes, especially if they're A, as good as Lekaramäki is, B, as big a draw.
That's a good point.
Right? And, yep. And you know, C, potentially, right? And I'm not saying this is the expectation. I'm saying there's at least a possibility. There's at least a world where you come to training camp next year having been unable to extend Dakota Joshua and Teddy Bluger and Sam Lafferty, right? And you've got real jobs up for grabs.
Mm-hmm.
And LeCaire Mackey goes in, and maybe Arshdeep Bains has sort of the inside track, and maybe Vasily Podkolzin has the inside track. But what we've seen from LeCaire Mackey this season, you know, you'd be like, hey, he might be in with a shot, even if the club would prefer to slow cook him. Like, there's a chance that this guy makes an unimpeachable case here, right? And I think that case becomes stronger if he's over.
If you can get him over to Abbotsford this spring.
Yeah. So, anyway, I think the club wants him. Well, I don't think. The club wants him to come over, but these are complicated situations, and things change quickly.
And if we see a result from that game over in Sweden with Orebro for Jonathan LeCaire Mackey, we will let you know. But we'll take a break right now, and we will hear.
Should note, by the way, LeCaire Mackey got the primary assist on the goal with 2 minutes and 40 seconds remaining to send it to overtime.
There you go.
Pretty good player.
He's been excellent this year. We'll take a break, and we will hear at length from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Hitting the most important topics for Vancouver sports fans. The People's Show with Vic Nizar. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here live from the Kintec Studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. Now, lots of texters giving us the update that Jonathan Karamaki's team has won in the shootout today. However, and I'm going to confess that I'm not up to date on the playoff format and the schedule and all of the different playoff permutations in Sweden, but one texter saying that I don't think they're a lock to make the postseason. The team they're tied with has to lose. So we'll see. I put a big asterisk, take this all with a grain of salt. I can't guarantee any of that information, but LeCaire Mackey not officially eliminated from play in Sweden yet. So we'll see what happens there.
Waiting for LeCaire Mackey.
Waiting for LeCaire Mackey, indeed. As mentioned, Rick Tocchet spoke to the Canucks media. Boy, did they have a lot to ask him today. We'll see how far we get through this marathon availability from Tocchet.
How long, once Jonathan LeCaire Mackey joins the Canucks, will it take for a sushi restaurant to come up with a LeCaire Mackey roll? Yeah, roll.
I like it. Smart idea.
Enterprising sushi restaurants.
There
get
you go.
On it.
All right, here is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet.
Week to week. Lower body, yeah. Yeah.
Then, I mean, you've been asked about Casey and his role in here. Yeah. I mean, confidence level that he's going to be able to carry the load here.
Well, I think you look at his past, and I think what he's done for us and with Pittsburgh. You know, he's ran with the ball. You know, and he's done it very well at times. So it's hard for him because he hasn't played a lot of games. You know, consecutive games. It's, you know, one game. Next week he plays whatever. So this practice this week for him, getting some games in is great. We have a lot of confidence in him. Like the way we're playing without the puck, which helps. But I also think that he's getting that, you know, I know, unfortunate, obviously Denver getting hurt, but him getting in there in that circumstance, I think that's going to help him for tomorrow. I really do.
You've got two guys down in Abbotsford that have played reasonably well. You had Silovs up here briefly. Like, was there a decision to make, or was it always Silovs that was going to get the call?
I think it was always Silov. I honestly kind of defer to Clarkey or to the guys down there. You know, it's not set in stone, but, you know, he's – I remember when we called him up last year, he actually had the second, third game. You can see the improvement in Silov. So I think it's good that he gets a taste up here.
Rick, what were you looking to get out of 2 days off here for the guys?
Well, some guys came in optional, so there's about 11 guys that did show up to get some touches. But I just think it's important to use this time to get some guys fresh mentally. I think last week we had a couple of days off. I think we played better since. I can see like guys like Hughes and Petey and those guys, they look a lot fresher. And I thought this is a good time. I don't know if we can do it again before April, that to get 2 days off. So I just thought it was a good time.
Carson Soucy spoke a little bit about having a hand injury, how he was able to continue skating throughout the time in his recovery. What have you thought about what he brings to this team, and specifically with his skating ability?
Yeah, just the calmness, his position. When there's heat, you know, he's got that good stick. When things get a little bit hectic out there, he'll make that one play. So, yeah, you're right. If you're going to get injured, hopefully it's upper body because he can skate, because he's hasn't really missed too much of a beat. Same thing with Dakota, too. You know, he's skating hard, so hopefully he doesn't miss a beat when he comes back with his legs. That's a lot harder to come back with, you know, knee injuries and stuff like that.
Rick, your team's been really good defensively. Where specifically do you think they've made the biggest improvements or adjustments?
Well, I've talked to you guys about this. If we make a mistake, we haven't, you know, we're not duplicating the second, third ones. You know, there was a stretch there this month, you know, in February, we were giving up tap-ins, you know, like we just were making too many mistakes and the same play. So you're going to make a mistake, but it seems like we're covering up for each other a lot better. I think that's because your mind's fresher. We just seem a little bit more focused. And these, you know, guy makes a mistake, I better take back ice, let Demmer have or Casey have that side of the net. Before, we were just all in. I mean, you know, you guys heard me say many times, we're pushing our chips in all the time. All of a sudden, it's a backdoor play. I don't care if you have two goalies in that. It's tough to stop those goals, right? So I think it's important that we're not duplicating mistakes.
Against Winnipeg, it felt like there was an emphasis on defending through the neutral zone and pressure in the neutral zone. Has that been a focus of your club lately?
Yeah, we did a presentation 4 games ago of taking speed away. I don't think we were taking speed away there for a bunch of games, being above guys. I mean, there's some talented players, teams we've been playing. You know, you go through the list, you know, McKinnon going through, you know, you got McDavid, all those guys coming through the zone with speed. We got to be above them. It takes a lot of hard work and it takes discipline, but, you know, you can't dive in. I think since we've kind of committed to that, you know, even against Vegas, I think we're starting to sort out our rush coverages a lot better for a defenseman.
With Tyler Myers back on the ice, when is he expected to return? And does your team's defensive performance make it easier to perhaps ease him back into the lineup?
Well, I'd like to get, you know, certain guys practice time. And actually, Myers had a good practice day. So, you know, whether he plays tomorrow or the next game, he's getting close. But I thought he had a really good practice day. So it gives, you know, coaches, you know, it's their hard decisions. But it's always nice to get a couple of guys or a guy that hasn't practiced much to get him with practice, you know, just because we're playing well, I still think you want to put your best players out there.
And with Ilya Mikheyev going through such a long drought, what is the message to him to keep him positive, to keep him focused, and to get him back scoring goals?
Yeah. Well, I think for him, the coaching staff has to give him confidence. Like, we can't be hanging our head, you're not scoring, and preaching the negative. Okay, the negative's not scoring, but I think the last 2-3 games, I think his game's come. He's playing more inside. He's getting more shots. It's hard to play inside all the time. You're gonna, you know, you got to keep doing it. You know, I think that's for him is, can he stay consistently, like tomorrow against Colorado, play with Millsy's line? Can he still go through the middle, take a beating in front to get those goals? That's the key, right? He's not getting rewarded in the sense of stats, but I think he's getting rewarded with his team play. Where before, I don't think he was playing as inside, and he wasn't really playing well without the puck. But now he's playing well without the puck, and he's getting chances. So you got to stick with it. That's, you know, we've all gone through slumps in our career. It's the you know, the war of attrition. Like, you got to keep doing it, and that's my message to him. And don't feel sorry for yourself. You know, you're contributing in other ways, really. And we got to help him. Our staff's got to help his confidence. You know, I can't be negative with him. I got to make sure that he understands, hey, you're playing well. Don't worry if you're not scoring right now. You know, do we like him to score? Of course. But I think his game's coming. I just don't want him to go this way, take the easy way out.
Speaking of DeSmith, obviously it's a big difference being number two and being number one. What do you like about his makeup that he's going to be able to handle this number one role for the next 3-4 weeks?
Well, I think his makeup, especially in the room, is elite. Like, he's just he's well-liked. The players, you know, listen, I'll be honest, I've been in the league somehow 40 years or whatever. When you like the goalie, you tend to block more shots for a guy. I don't know why. I've had some goalies where you're not a big fan of the guy. I'm not saying I kind of veered out of the way, but when you really like a goalie, you really dive, and those guys really love Casey. So I think you'll see a lot of guys willing to block shots like they do for Denver.
Lindholm, where do you see his game right now?
I like his game. Away from the puck, his hockey IQ. You know, I know people want him to score and stuff. He'll score, but I mean, he's won some crucial draws. I don't know if people understand where, you know, we're under the gun. It's 4 minutes left in L.A., Vegas, where we've had some situations where our D were tired and he went out there and won that draw. And to get it out, that's big. That's a possession. If they get the possession, who knows? So I think, for me, the play without the puck has been really good.
They always say that your offense comes from your defensive play. So do you see this eventually coming for Elias?
Yeah, I see it. I think, you know, I think Garza's, I thought he's played a couple of good games. I think Podsy's, you know, he's playing with a rookie right now. He's playing with Podsy, and I think Podsy's done a nice job. So he's accepted his role, and he'll get more. He'll get more, but I'm not worried about him at all.
And I know you talked about Z when he came here, the transition. I mean, that's long gone. He's comfortable with the system and everything now?
I think he is. I think, I really don't know exactly the system of Calgary. I know a little bit, but, you know, we play a little bit. I think we play fast. I'm not saying we play faster than Calgary. I'm not saying that. But we like to play, push the pace and stuff like that. He's a very responsible guy. So sometimes, you know, I don't mind him taking off every once in a while. But I think he's a responsible guy, which we love around here.
With the schedule being as spread out as it is, can you see – potentially Casey playing all the games over the next couple of weeks, or is there a plan to maybe get Archers in for at least one of those games right now?
Yeah, as of now, I mean, we're just going like game to game. I mean, obviously, Casey, if something really bad happens to him, but, you know, he's definitely going to get the next two games. I mean, we'll go from there, but he's going to have some practice time. I think Casey deserves a chance to get the ball and take it, you know, regardless of what happens tomorrow night, but which I think he'll be fine. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes here.
Is there an upside that, you know, assuming you get Denver back sooner than later, that now he's fresh and rested as well?
Yeah, I mean, you take the negative with a positive. If you think, and I thought of that, right? Because do I want him hurt? No. Do I want him in the net tomorrow? Of course, right? But whether he's out, how long he's out, he's going to definitely get a mental and be fresher for us. So let's use it as an advantage for us.
And with Myers, once your whole defensive group is all healthy, is it an opportunity for you to potentially, you know, load manage some guys and give a couple of them off here and there between now?
Yeah. I know, you know, guys don't want to hear it. You know, it's going to be, you know, you got to make sure that you make sure as coaches that you explain to certain guys that some guys might not like it if they're out, but we're at the point of the season where if we got healthy D, you're going to have some good defensemen that are going to sit out, and that's the job of the mentality of the coaches to have to make sure guys understand that. You got to be a good team guy and all that stuff. But, I've been there. We've all been there before. You don't want to – everybody wants to play. We're lucky we have – you know, we got a healthy lineup. Even like Friedman, I mean, he's not playing, but even the games he played, I thought he played good well for us. So it's – you got to stay ready.
Rick, can you tell us all the goalies you didn't like?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You can tell me later.
I didn't block shots at any goalie, so.
But you mentioned when guys like the goalie, they'll do maybe more things. Is it your experience that when you change a goalie and you talk about structure and staples every day, does that kind of focus or heighten everyone's focus about playing really well so that they're helping the goalie?
Well, I just believe, like, you know, you're up to nothing, right? And there's like 15 minutes left in the third period, and you know, you got the puck. Do you want to be risky or not? You know, you sometimes you think of, hey, Casey hasn't played a ton in the sense of a lot of games. We're trying to get his, you know, he's going to play a bunch of games for us. Do I want to put him in some bad situations if I turn the puck over, they get a 3-on-1? You know, like, I think those guys are conscious of that. Hey, Casey's done a lot for us. He doesn't play a ton all the time. He's a great guy. I think that comes into play. And the guy dumps it in and because he likes him.
And
I don't know if that makes sense. So if a guy dumps it in, doesn't dump it into more, it's 3-on-1. Yeah, you're going to say he doesn't like the guy.
On one hand, you know, it's a great time to miss your goalie for a couple of weeks because of the schedule and you're at home. On the other hand, you do have playoffs next month. So are you entirely comfortable that whatever the time frame is of Thatcher, that he is going to be back and have time to be in top form for the playoffs?
Yeah, he's not going to play or go on the ice till we feel he's, you know, I don't think anybody's ever 100%, but to the standards that we have earned, he's not going to play until he's 100%. I think as close to 100% as possible. You know, we're 100%.
Worst case scenario, is he still going to be back in time for the playoffs? For what?
Yes. Standards? Yes. Yeah, I'm not worried about that at all. At all.
Do you think Petey's feeling a load off since he signed his contract? Is he
I have a conversation a couple weeks ago. He feels in a good space, like headspace. I think when he's, you know, he's a really interesting guy, great guy to work with. But when he's mind free, he plays his best. And I think sometimes he gets clouded, you know, when you struggle and stuff. And everybody's human. But yeah, I just like it. I think his practices have been so much better the last 3 weeks. To me, like the power play, I think he was terrific out there. So he just looks a lot fresher. And I think having those 2 days off for him too is going to make him just to the stretch drive feel a lot fresher.
And just going forward, I mean, you were able to use some rest as a weapon. I mean, how much is rest going to be a weapon for you guys in the next month or so?
Well, that's the, you know, we talked to the science guy, the other coach's experience. I still think, you know, we still have to be, you know, I'm a team. You have to be in great shape to play. So I can't always give these guys a day off. They got to work. And they do off ice stuff. So it's a balance. And then it's off the ice, what you're doing properly. Are you resting? Make sure that you are doing the right things, eating well. If, you know, if you're in for the long haul, you got to do the right things. And I think that's why I felt the 2 days, because I think the guys do the right things. Some guys came and worked out. Some guys went on the ice. But and some guys needed it. You know, Hughes, I think, needed 2 days. I didn't want to see him. And he's out there and has a great practice today. So hopefully that'll work out for him.
As we get closer to the end of the season, there's a lot of talk around, you know, specific awards, individual awards, and your name is consistently brought up for the Jack Adams. Does that come into mind at all at this point?
No, I'm not, honestly. Awards mean nothing to me right now. And I just, even for players, you know, I know this guy points. If you play well, you'll get the gratification, whatever you want after the season. But to me, it's you start thinking that way. Anybody, I know I'm chasing goal scoring. I'm doing this. I'm trying to get career highs. That's when you play bad. So there's no difference to me. I'm not chasing anything. I just got to continue to be the day-to-day coach and help, you know, get help from my coaches.
You mentioned Quinn and sort of taking those 2 days off.
Yeah.
Do you think this is a learning process for him? The level he's played at this season from a leadership standpoint to be able to try and stay at that throughout the year and how he manages himself, his body, and his game?
Yeah, he's I think what he did this summer and throughout the year, the way his nutrition, he's done some different stuff nutrition-wise. He's gearing himself for a long haul, right? And it's no different in the games. You know, it's, you know, they usually March, the guys have not played important games. Now they're playing important games. Now you have to manage yourself on the ice. You know, he's got to be careful of shift lengths, you know, when to go and when not to go. Those are the next level things for him. And he's learning all that stuff. You know, you can't always go, go, go. Sometimes it's okay to be neutral on the ice. And I think when you play important games, you'll start to feel that. You know what I mean? That's why this week it's important that, you know, we've played tight games, 2-1, 3-1 games. I think it's really important that it's hit our team now, going, you know, the next month, that we have to be comfortable. And as an individual, PD, you know, our core guys, they have to be comfortable playing 2-1 hockey games. Doesn't matter if they score, you know, I don't care if they have to score in two games, but if we're winning those games, they have to understand it's okay. You know, that's all, if that makes any sense.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet. We are enjoying listening to him so much. We let the whole thing, the whole 16 minutes of wisdom from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet. But I got to say, it peaked in the
right
first 10
right
seconds.
Right off the hop.
It peaked in the first 10 seconds.
We were crying laughing.
That was very good. The sheepish week to week lower body injury. Yeah, lower body injury. So good. The self-awareness from Rick Tocchet. Fantastic.
The like hockey speak is one word I think needs. We need to like have that stronger in our lexicon. You know what I mean? Like this idea of a way of speaking that you only ever encounter in public facing communication from hockey players or hockey people, right? We all know it. Like we all can mimic the cadence, the oh, you know, we'll just have to take it shift by shift. And,
yeah, pucks in deep.
Right, exactly.
Yep.
If we play predictable hockey, you know,
we start every answer with obviously.
Oh yeah, or like I said, and it's
so
like,
actually, hold on. We just got a few minutes before the end of the show. So you, of course, former hockey PR guy. I have a friend who's been on me for a long time now to ask you specifically what the deal of hockey players saying obviously is. He's like noticed it, and it's become such a like it's a kind of thing where you notice it, and then he can't stop unnoticing it. And he's like, "What's going on here?"
So it's an interesting thing because I don't think people understand the role of the camera in guiding how this plays out. Right? Like you can have a real conversation as a reporter in a locker room. It helps to have, you know, some basis for trust anyway with a player who's willing to talk to you, but. You can have a real conversation, but you can't really have one on camera, right?
Sure.
Like, on camera, there's a totally different pressure. There's like lights on their face. You know, it's a totally different experience than like sitting next to a guy at a stall and just like, you know, gabbing for a minute. On camera, I think there's a real reticence, like for sure with players for whom English isn't a first language. Like oftentimes the reason that they seem even more like stilted is that they just don't want to look silly. Like it's honestly the most normal human emotion possible. It's like people don't want to look silly, right? And so or they don't want to be embarrassed. And I think words like obviously or like I said, things like that, I honestly think it's guys are working through their options of what to say in real time and are buying time for their brain to catch up to their mouth.
I think there's also an element of, I have to say something here. I don't want to act like I'm dropping these great pearls of wisdom. You know what I mean? So
totally.
I'm going to be like, well, you know this, of course.
Yeah,
obviously, you know what I'm about to say.
There's a fake humility to it, too. Yeah,
yeah.
I get that.
It's like, you got to say something. So, well, obviously, we got to get pucks in deep. All right. So that's...
I always like the, like I said, though, and then they say something completely different that definitely hasn't been brought up.
I like I said, it's the, like, as per my last email of the hockey world.
It is. Totally. And it's no less passive-aggressive, right?
Yeah. Get the ask the follow-up question. Yeah, like I said, we have to play better. It's like, all right, fair enough. You got to play better. Just a few more minutes here before the end of the show. Just a couple other notes from Rick Tocchet there, noting that once Tyler Myers is back, and I know Myers was skating at practice today, saying that, you know, there's going to be some good defensemen who are going to have to sit out down the stretch. So it sounds like it might be some load management for the Canucks blue line for the final 16 games of the schedule, which makes sense, right? Noah Juulsen has played really well. You count him in the mix. They've got seven defensemen who they really, really like. Now with Carson Soucy back, with Tyler Myers expected back soon, you can only dress six. So we'll see how that rotation goes. It's always a tricky thing in the NHL, right? It's just so foreign to the league. And I remember, you know, earlier in the year, I think Ian Cole was scratched for a game as part of load management. But it's tough to take guys like Tyler Myers, guys like Ian Cole. Like Ian Cole, Stanley Cup winner, longtime NHL player, you know, competitive guys. It's hard to sit them out down the stretch, even if you're selling it as getting prepared for the playoffs. And all that. James from Richmond says, players in interviews say, I mean, and they haven't said anything yet. Yeah, we could spend the rest of the, well, we could spend a whole show going over hockey speak cliches at some point. But we won't do that today. We'll wrap it up right here today. Tomorrow, it's a Canucks game day. A devastatingly long 3-day break after that Winnipeg win comes to an end tomorrow.
Oh, speak for yourself.
You were out of prison.
This is brilliant.
You were polishing off a fantastic Cody Hodson feature
That's
in that
true.
Time.
Thank you. Yeah, go read it at The Athletic.
It was good stuff. As I told you during the break, I was a committed Cody Hodson mark back in the day. So
a lot of Canucks.
It pulled at my heartstrings, I got to be honest.
I lost a bet once about who would have more points in the first 4 years of their career, Cody Hodgson or Nazem Kadri, with my Leafs fan buddy in Toronto.
There you go. Yeah. So go check that out about Cody Hodgson's comeback in the AHL. It is legitimately an excellent story by Drancer. We'll be back tomorrow on a Canucks game day, crossover day on a Wednesday as well. So tune in for that right here on Sportsnet 650.